It's no secret, I think, guys, that we all miss traveling. A couple of us have been fortunate enough to travel for work amid the pandemic. We're hoping it'll kick up again. One time back in the day, we went to DC to figure out what the heck is going on with one of the most conspiracy-ridden cities in the country.
Yes, we traveled out to the actual capital. Again, I'm on these classic episodes, I keep thinking about the videos because this is 2015. We're still making a ton of videos back then.
Yeah.
Ben was there. I was shooting him with a camera, and there was some weird action going on behind us as we're talking about this stuff. Go to the YouTube channel. Check it out.
Yeah, I think this was before my time, maybe just a little bit. Just barely before. But I do remember the first time I went to DC, I was so taken by the fact that even the homeless population there, absurdly informed, and have some pretty wild ideas of what's going on behind the curtain.
Yeah, well said. One of the things that's funny to me is that conspiracies in DC, it help us get to interesting conversation about how quickly stuff becomes normal. Like, imagine the room where people are pitching the idea for the Washington Monument. You would think maybe it's a statue of Washington. You would think maybe it's like a depiction of a notable battle or a pivotal moment in the formation of the country.
Now, how about weird phallic Illuminati obelisk?
Yeah, like I'm saying, at some point they said, you know what, let's do an obelisk, something uniquely American.
At least it wasn't the original version of what that monument was going to be,
which was much more Masonic. But no spoilers. Let's get into it.
From UFOs to ghosts and government cover-ups, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
I'm Ben, and we are here, as always, with our super producer, Noel the Mason Brown, in spirit, at least.
Yes, the Masonic spirit of Noel Brown exists in this room.
Right, we'll go ahead and have our secret handshake here.
Ooh, I haven't seen that one before.
Yeah, we can do it in front of the microphones because this is an audio podcast. So we're pretty informal today. What we're going to talk about is Washington, D.C. Just a little bit. We're just going to scratch along the surface of this gigantic thing, both as a subject, as a town, as a historical hub.
Well, it's strangely small in size comparatively to the importance that it holds for this country and perhaps for the world.
Yeah, that's a great point. Now, Matt, you've been to Washington before, and, you know, later this week, tomorrow, in fact, as we record this, this podcast will come out on Friday,
yes,
right, on the 31st of July, if you're hearing it the same day it comes out. And when it's out, we will be hopefully not arrested somewhere in the metro area.
We can only hope.
We can only hope. But we're not strangers to the town. We've both gone. So what was your experience like?
Yes, I have been there a few times. I think three in total. I've taken a trip for school and for high school. Mm-hmm. Then I went just on a whim one time. And then the last time I was there was for the Rally for Sanity. I forget the full title, but it was the shindig that Jon Stewart put together with Stephen Colbert.
Uh-huh.
That was amazing. That was one of my favorite experiences of all time.
The Rally to Restore Sanity and or Fear.
That's, yes, yes. Colbert bringing in the fear wagon as well. It was amazing to see so many human beings on the National Mall at mm-hmm. one time. For something that, you know, admittedly was for comedy, for jokes, but it had this air of seriousness to it at the time. It was strange. And I was at, what year was that? 2008, 2000?
That was 2010.
2010. Wow. Okay. So that's when I was relatively new in my political awakening, my just awakening to all of the larger things that happen in mm-hmm. the world.
Yeah.
And I had been watching Jon Stewart on The Daily Show for so long.
Sure.
The whole thing resonated with me being in that place, mm-hmm. and I can't wait to be there again.
Yeah, I wonder if we'll see John up there. I hear good things about him. It's strange.
He's finishing. He's got 7 shows left, I think.
Yeah, who knows what he's going to do? Go back to directing, perhaps. Go back to, I don't know. Maybe he'll take a vacation. Doesn't seem like he actually gets many of those.
Perhaps
there was this moving moment when he came up to make a speech to the assembled crowd, which you saw live, and it was clear, it was apparent how overwhelmed he was by this. And John Stewart is not a guy who seems to get overwhelmed easily.
Yeah, he keeps it together.
He keeps it together. He's talked to people who later turned out to be essentially war criminals, like Pervez Musharraf, the former leader of Pakistan. And when I saw that, I thought for a second, oh man, did you not anticipate that as the most trusted journalist overall in the U.S., you know, which he, a thing that he usually disavows, but a lot of people in polls say that he is their most trusted source of news. And, you know, take that as you will, I would say. But, I can tell you a little bit about the times I went to D.C. I went there as a kid in high school as well. I'm fairly certain it was high school, though the past does blur like a watercolor in the rain.
Most certainly.
And I also went up to D.C. a couple of times to do in the process of joining the State Department before I became disillusioned by it. And I don't mean to disparage the State Department professionals working there, the people that I met in the course of that before I decided not to go that route, were all very sincere, and nobody was a jerk or anything. I just started to get the feeling that maybe the goals that I had and the goals that the State Department has might not align.
Yeah. So this was before going deep into international affairs.
This was slightly before I started studying that, at Tech. So we've been there before, but we've never lived there. And DC is interesting in the U.S. because it is unique amidst all the other area classifications, right?
Mm-hmm.
What we'd like to do is talk a little bit about the history of DC. So we know that before the U.S. was even a thing, before anybody said, hey, guys, hold my beer, let me try this, the place was populated.
Yes, you know, it was.
Even though there are these myths about the U.S. being relatively sparsely populated, they are myths. Human presence dates back at least 4,000 years. The European exploration of the region, so far as we know, started early in the 16th century, so 1600-ish. And there was a guy named Captain John Smith, you might remember, who was there in 1608. The different tribes that lived around the area included people like the Natochunk, the Potomac, after which, you know, the Potomac, the Powhatan, and some other groups, right? And the present day Georgetown is actually the site of a village called Tohoga, which I honestly may be mispronouncing. We also know a little bit about the first colonial landowners who settled down there, right?
Yeah, that would be George Thompson and Thomas Girard. These guys were both granted the Blue Plains Tract in 1662, along with the St. Elizabeth area of land there, and a couple other tracts in Anacostia, like Capitol Hill.
And then other tracts or areas down the Potomac as time ground on. Now, Thompson, probably much to the dismay
of his later family,
of his descendants, he sold his properties at Capitol Hill in 1670 to a guy named Thomas Notley. This continued for a while, you know, as more Europeans were establishing areas and, of course, clashing with the people who already lived there and said, what are you doing?
Yeah, guys, hey.
Right. And this led to the construction of a fort in 1697. It was in the bounds of what is now DC. But even though all this stuff happened, right? Even though all this stuff happened in the 1600s, Washington, D.C., of course, as many of our listeners surely know, was not the original capital of the U.S. The U.S. has had multiple capitals. There was one in New York City when they decided to form it in D.C., and then Philadelphia, Annapolis. The list goes on. The area that is called the District of Columbia didn't become the capital until about 1790, right?
Yeah, that's right. And that was with the Residence Act of July 16th, 1790.
And D.C. itself was founded in 1791, the same year that President Washington commissioned a guy named Pierre Charles L'Enfant, a French-born architect, mm-hmm. to design the new capital.
And oh, design he did.
Yeah. This comes into play later, right?
Yeah. Oh, he there were a lot of strange things with his design that were cool, admittedly. They're just these huge, broad streets, these avenues that were basically created out of these rectangles. And it was the whole idea was to provide space for landscaping, open right. areas. But man, it sure looks strange when you look at it on a map, some of the areas.
Right. You guys see what we're foreshadowing here, which we'll get to. So Pierre based his designs on plans from cities, great European cities, right? Paris, Amsterdam, Milan, and so on. But the layout later, we'll find later, becomes a source of controversy in the modern age and becomes, polluted might be a fair word by later builders.
Yes.
Making new streets, random buildings in places that he would never want them.
Mm-hmm.
So today, or at least as of 2014, Washington, the actual city of Washington, D.C., has a population of just over 650,000. I think you might have the exact number.
Yeah, 658,893.
Good save.
Those extra three people that came in last summer.
Right. Yeah. And that seems like a deceptively small number for the capital of such a large country.
Deceptively small indeed, because that number is only accounting for the actual city, the city of Washington, D.C.
The actual, District of Columbia.
Yes. And you look at the metro area that's surrounding it, that number jumps all the way up to, I think, 5.8 million.
Huge.
Yeah, a little bigger.
So that counters places like, or that rather encompasses places like Maryland, Virginia, nearby towns in those areas, one of which you and I went on a trip to a few years back. Very strange experience. It's a different story.
Yeah.
One of the biggest controversies, at least in the mainstream eye for DC, is that in a burst of tremendous irony, local citizens of the District of Columbia have no representation in Congress.
Yeah, if you live in that tiny little area, sorry.
The capital of a country partially formed by this principle of no taxation without representation, have no representation.
Because they're not a state.
In Congress, yes. And due to the nature of this organization, the legal system of DC is Byzantine. It is incredibly complicated. If you are going through the criminal justice system in DC, and I hope you never ever are, in any state really, then what you will find is that things are a little bit different. First, since about 1973 and at other times in DC's history, Congress has allowed locally elected officials like a mayor and a council to carry out certain local government functions. However, because Congress has constitutional authority to control the area, they literally can overturn any of those laws anytime they want, and they don't have to have a reason.
Snap. Guess what? Sorry, you don't get to do that anymore.
No,
whatever it is. Crime has historically been an issue. It has declined over time, but it remains above the U.S. average. This, and, you know, of course, D.C. is a town chock full of lawyers, so it's not surprising that would be so, so complicated. Here's one example. So let's say, pick one of our coworkers that our audience would know.
How about Chuck?
All right, Chuck Bryant from Stuff You Should Know. So let's say Chuck gets on the wrong side of the law. Oh. And he is going up the river. He's got to get a lawyer. He's got to go to trial. Serious business. So, oh, and by the way, listeners, write in and let us know what crime you would imagine Chuck committing. And with that being said, we're just using him as an example. He has not, to our knowledge, done anything crazy.
Zero crimes.
Right. Zero crimes. And instead of this crime, this hypothetical crime, being handled by a state attorney, as it would in any other similar case, it goes directly to the U.S. District Attorney. It does not pass go. It does not collect $200.
Seems like that would be a lot for the U.S. District Attorney to handle.
Yes. Yeah, it's true. I'd love to hear from somebody affiliated with that system. So, of course, Washington today is also home to the three branches of the federal government, nearly 200 foreign embassies, Matt's favorite, lobbyists, and think tanks.
Yeah, lobbyists. K Street. Did you ever see that show K Street that came out?
Yeah, pretty good. Went for about 2 seasons before it was pulled. Tremendously popular in Washington.
It was tremendously popular in Washington because it's kind of looking behind the curtain. The staff they had, the production staff and people writing, knew what they were talking about. It presented almost this weird dystopian version of reality, which was sad.
Now that's, you know, that's a great segue to the other stuff we wanted to talk about. Here's where it gets crazy. Maybe. Let's talk about the conspiracy theories. Let's go back to the Freemasons.
Okay.
That's the biggest one. Remember we did a couple of episodes about Freemasons early on when this show started, and we thought we would have about a month of doing it before we got fired.
Yeah, especially after that episode, just because it's the reality of the, let's say, the Masonic hand that was inside the creation of DC and that has historically been a part of at least a substantial number of our leaders. Mm-hmm. There's a Masonic line that goes through there. If we were talking about something that we really shouldn't have been talking about, then there's one reason that we get canceled, right?
Huh.
Second reason, and I think most important reason, that the show was just, why would you make this? you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, also, you know, I think there's such inherent narcissism and paranoia sometimes. I really don't think, I hope these are words I don't have to eat later, but I really don't believe that there's any reason that somebody would see our show and say, oh no, they have to be stopped, right?
Absolutely not. But you know, it is called Stuff They Don't Want You to Know.
Sure.
And we get comments on YouTube all the time like, what? Are all the major secrets just on YouTube available for free?
Well, I would say while that is a very good comparison up there with the earlier comparison you and I had made about Ouija boards and whether proof of life after death comes from a mass marketed Parker Brothers game.
Yes.
While that is a reasonable thing, the truth is that YouTube and podcasting, and I'm not saying our shows in particular, but YouTube and podcasting and communicating directly to people online is, despite its many pitfalls, still a better chance of getting less manipulation or less suppression of a story, right?
Yeah, there are fewer people dictating what people who create content that goes there, what they can and cannot say.
Right, exactly. Like whomever is affiliated with a large industrial giant like Westinghouse or something is probably not going to be able to give an objective report on any problems, essentially systemic problems, with a lot of Westinghouse equipment. It's just not going to happen.
Nope.
And if they're controlled by a
car company for some reason, then they're going to give a very different report on recalls. So that's the nature of it. But the idea that DC is this Freemason town, the idea that it is at heart run by the Masons, is historically a tremendously popular idea, so much so that there was an anti-Masonic party, anti-Masonic political party at for a time in the U.S. They're, of course, no longer around in a serious capacity. So we've done this stuff on whether Freemasons control Washington. We also did one on Albert Pike, I believe, a big figure in the Masonic tradition.
That had, I think, a magical amulet of some sort. I forget the whole episode, but he could communicate, or allegedly he could communicate somehow with the demons through his magical amulet.
Similar to like a Key of Solomon thing.
Pretty cool.
Which is, I guess, not – or Ring of Solomon, rather, the legendary one. It is true that there are some seeds of truth to this because
– Not to the amulet.
Not to the amulet, but to the Freemasons.
Yes.
Because it's true that the national headquarters of Masonry is in D.C. It's the prime temple for all of the other lodges, or the prime lodge, I should say.
Oh, yeah, it's – that's where you can find the House of the Temple. It's also where you can find the Supreme Council of the Scottish Rite. There are a couple other buildings. I think George Washington even has a memorial.
Right, which we're gonna have to visit.
Not the George Washington statue, not the
creepy obelisk.
Not the obelisk, but a whole separate building, which is the Masonic memorial for George Washington. And the official name of that House of the Temple, by the way, is, quote, Home of the Supreme Council, 33 degrees, ancient accepted Scottish Rite, Freemasonry. It's also the Southern Jurisdiction, Washington, D.C., USA.
Ah, okay. So it doesn't quite roll off the tongue. I can see how people call it the house, or maybe people just refer to it as the temple.
Yeah, I've often heard it called the Supreme Council, or the House of the Supreme Council.
So there's another piece of truth here. It is also true that Masons were involved in the construction of numerous other historic buildings in the area. We've got a great quote from a guy named Mark Tabbert, who was the director of collections at the George Washington Masonic Memorial in Alexandria, Virginia. He says, individually, Masons had a role in building the White House and building and designing D.C. And small-scale Masonic symbols can be found throughout the city as they can in most U.S. cities. So this note here is important because he's saying individual Masons were involved, not necessarily a big collective saying, this is the pentagram we shall rot upon the face of this nation.
Absolutely. He's also reminding you that Masons have had their hand in creating buildings and cities throughout the United States. If you go to Decatur, Georgia, a smaller little town east of where we are right now, and there's a building, I don't know if it's the city council building, it's one of the main buildings, like county courthouse, I think. And then directly across from it is the old Freemason temple, or it used to be a lodge there, and now it's a mixed use building. But on the corner you can see there's a big sign up that has the what is it? The Masonic
compass,
symbol?
The square and compass.
The square and compass. Then on the bottom, you can look at the cornerstone that has a bunch of etching on there.
Right. Cornerstones have been important in this kind of construction for a very long time.
Wait, so Ben, this is either it makes you feel a little better. You're like, oh, well, just Freemasons have a hand in everything. Or it makes you feel a little worse. Oh, wait, Freemasons just have a hand in everything.
Well, this is more a statement, I guess, about my personal philosophy. So this is just my opinion, ladies and gentlemen. I don't have a fact to back it up. I am naturally, instinctively, and continually concerned and skeptical about the motivations for any group that requires secrecy.
I hear that.
You know, it's not, I, like many other people, believe it's not enough for someone to pat the public on the head and say, trust us, we're the good guys.
Don't worry, Bobby, we've got this.
Right, right. Because another thing that we have learned throughout human history and modern day psychology is that very few people that we would consider bad guys or people who are people who have antagonistic aims or something like that, very few of those people ever think of themselves as villains. They're the good guys, perhaps misunderstood, right?
Yeah, misunderstood, or perhaps their good goals, or the goals that they believe are for the greater good, or for some greater good.
Yeah.
This is the right thing to do. Sometimes sure. You have to break some eggs, Benjamin.
Right, Matchman. Sometimes you have to break some eggs. So the Freemasons, I think we should do a podcast entirely on the Masonic orders.
Absolutely. We need to find a high-ranking Mason in Atlanta to come and talk to us. Who's willing to talk to us?
There's no shortage. We could also interview some Masonic historians.
That's great.
Yeah. The stuff that we had found, I had speculated for a while the idea of joining Masonry, but I try to be very respectful. So I would never join an organization with the idea that I will be a mole. It just doesn't seem...
Yeah, I would never do that either.
It doesn't seem like the right kind of motivation.
Agreed.
Right. Your sarcasm is dripping off of you and rolling across the table. What secret society have you infiltrated, Matt?
I haven't, Ben. I would never do such a thing.
Have you really?
No.
Okay. Well, if you have, and if you are, then it doesn't necessarily have to be the Masons, because we get caught up in this idea, which is a valid concern, right, of secret societies, but Freemasons are not the only secret society. It really depends on what you would consider secret, right? Many of the discussions that the United Nations or various embassies hold in Washington, those are not for public consumption. There's another group called the Second Stewards that recently got into some heat for apparently trying to fix the election at Georgetown.
Oh, wow.
I think the reporting's a little bit skewed there. The Second Stewards were supposed to have been abolished, but it came to light in 2013 that someone who was going to be in the student government, head of student government, who was running for it at Georgetown, was a member of the Second Stewards Society. So, colleges, especially higher level colleges, are just lousy with this stuff.
Can we just talk about George W. Bush versus Kerry with the Skull and Bone Society?
Right. Over
mutual membership.
Yale. Yeah.
A bit weird.
Well, that's another thing. Should elected officials be allowed to be members of a secret society?
No.
I mean, I don't think so.
But where do your loyalties lie, Ben?
Right. We do have some unfortunate news about the actual street layout.
Yeah.
If you look at it, and if you look at some of the history, it doesn't seem that there was purposely a satanic pentagram or something constructed.
It is eerily close to that, I have to say. If you just look at it with a map, let's say a satellite, a Google Maps.
Right.
But you can tell it's unfinished. If they did mean to make it, then they purposefully didn't finish it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't know. It seems a little weird, right, Ben?
Well, you can read things from the people who believe that a larger Masonic organization and or satanic secret religion built the layout. While you can read these things, what you also see is that they claim these somehow harness ley lines. For people who believe in ley lines, these are geomagnetic lines crisscrossing the earth that supply some sort of energy. And the interpretation of what sort of energy that might be changes over time.
Yes, and it's certainly something we have yet to prove in any scientific fashion.
Right. However, there is solid proof, of course, that many of the things cited as hubs for ley lines in the U.S. are, or in the world, I should say, do exhibit a sophisticated knowledge of astronomy. So they're definitely built for that time, right? To measure the rise and the fall of the stars and the sun and the moon equinox, solstice, stuff like that. And in many cases, to also predict those movements in the heavens, which to me is brilliant and so intelligent that it's kind of frightening, especially because in the modern age, for such a long time, people loved to deride the past generations, right?
Yes. Those heathens, they knew not what we know now.
Right. And again, this is just scratching the surface. We haven't even talked about how incredibly weird the obelisk for the Washington Monument is. Now, incredibly old obelisks are, or the original plans for the Washington Monument, which had an obelisk, but also this temple.
Yeah.
Right? A straight up old school temple. And
which to me is kind of what became the Masonic Memorial for Washington.
Ah, yes. And we're going to have to head out because, candidly, we have to pack and do some other stuff. But we wanted to open a conversation, ask you what some of your favorite theories about Washington, D.C. are, and what you think the future of the city is. Especially given some of these enormous contradictions, would you ever live there?
Have you ever lived there?
Do you live there now? Can we crash on your couch?
Please?
We're kidding, hopefully. Hopefully we'll get it together enough that I don't care, man. I'll sleep on the train. You know, I don't sleep much.
Well, and one other thing. I hope some of you joined us on our Periscope missions that we were doing while we were in D.C., if you did not, hopefully we'll be doing that again at some point. So make sure you are following us on Twitter at Conspiracy Stuff to get updates of when those little quick live broadcasts might happen. We're going to try and surprise you guys a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That would be huge. Also, follow us on Facebook, y'alls.
Yeah, you can find Facebook and Twitter. We're Conspiracy Stuff at both of those. I had a blog entry recently where I put our first, the time of our first Periscope experiment, and I'll be continually updating that blog as well as the social media stuff to let you guys know where we're going, when we'll be there. And if you would like, if you're in the area, feel free to swing by and say hello. We won't be too weird, I hope, right?
Not in an extreme way, but the weirdness you will catch on, you'll be able to feel it.
I'm a regular guy. I'm an open book on a sunny day in a meadow.
Well, I am not.
All right. So, we're going to go ahead and get out of here. Oh, and there's one more thing. We said earlier that our super producer, Noel, is with us in spirit, but not in the flesh. And we can't hear him, but you guys probably can.
DC, a reflection by super producer Noel Brown.
Washington, D.C. is not an easy to play the piano is not an easy to play the piano is not an issue, that the two man in black screen is not the best way of saying it is the most recent version in the first place. I have no clue who I was like I don't have the right way and it will take the bus driver just got to oops my mom and my friends, to be ooh. Sorry everyone. The spirit world is really 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 weird.
What is that? Is that him?
Well, I didn't hear anything, but no. It was cool sitting here awkwardly with you in silence for a few minutes.
I did hear that door open and close really loudly a couple times.
Must be the spirit world.
And that's the end of this classic episode. If you have any thoughts or questions about this episode, you can get into contact with us in a number of different ways. One of the best is to give us a call. Our number is 1-833-STDWYTK. If you don't want to do that, you can send us a good old-fashioned email. We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.